You're listening to This Week in Palestine. I'm your host, Ann Lucas. Sabah al-khair, masa al-khair, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. You are listening to This Week in Palestine, and I'm your host, Ann Lucas. This past week, I had the opportunity to attend a webinar organized by the National Labor Network for Ceasefire. The title was The War in Gaza, Voices of Palestinian Workers, and I found it so insightful, I wanted to share it with you mostly in its entirety. Most of the webinar was specific people involved in various aspects of the Palestinian labor movement talking about what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank since October 7th and how it's impacting workers. But they also looked at what the international labor movement can do to support Palestinian liberation. For those unfamiliar, in the occupied territories, there's a fairly sophisticated system of trade unions that represents and unites workers across the West Bank and Gaza. It also connects the workers between the West Bank and Gaza. And the speakers made that connection very real for me. Of course, the Palestinians in the West Bank are living their own occupation nightmare while most eyes have been on the genocide in Gaza. So you'll get a really good sense of what the West Bank has been going through, not just Gaza. Listening to all of these Palestinian workers overall, I really feel like I was seeing both a bird's eye view of the occupation, but also the role of trade unions in overcoming it. And with international trade unionists having a big role to play in ending the occupation, I could really see a full circle role for the labor movement, both local and global, in ending the occupation. We have a lot to listen to, so yalla bina, let's go. This webinar was hosted by Mark Demenstein of the American Postal Workers Union, one very large American union to call for a ceasefire. You will hear him introducing the individual speakers and asking questions at the end in the Q&A section with the guests. When Brother Mark introduced the guest, he will focus on their organizing within trade union affiliations, so you will hear about that from him. But before we start listening, I wanted to quickly run through the names of who is speaking and in what order. First is Dr. Salama Abu Zweiter. He is a medical doctor in Gaza. He was not able to join live. You will hear his recorded statement. After that, the first live guest is Farouk Assad. She is a TV journalist in the West Bank. She is then followed by Ala Umayis, who is a transit worker, also in the West Bank. And the last guest is Rafif Ziada. She's actually in London. She's on the Faculty of International Development at King's College. Okay, I need to do an aside here. If you are like me, and you know much more about Palestinian poetry than the Palestinian labor movement, you might be wondering, is this Rafif Ziada the poet? And the answer is yes. The poet and the trade unionist are one in the same. And while everyone else is talking about the situation of workers right now, she will speak about what the international labor movement can do to end the occupation, and she will have great advice, great perspective, as well as resources. And just one more little thing. For some reason, in Dr. Zweiter's audio, very briefly, just for a couple of seconds, there's a bit of an echo. I don't know why. It really is very, very brief. And otherwise, the audio is actually really quite good.
Our first speaker will have to join us from video because Dr. Zweiter is in Gaza and it is impossible due to his displacement and other factors to join us in person. So can we begin the video, please?
In the name of God, I
begin.
The...
International trade unions in the USA, friends, voters, and advocates for the right of the Palestinian people to defend their Palestinian cause and their righteous right to establish of statehood and to end the last occupation in the world. I'm talking to you from the camp, displacement camp in Khan Yunis after the fourth displacement. I've been moving from one place to another in Gaza. Most of the places that we moved to are unsafe. And so far, our people are subject to genocide and being targeted, and their livelihood is targeted, and a complete destruction of the infrastructure. I remind you of this continuous war waging on the Palestinian people against all the components of the society, and the marchers are over 36,000 marchers and more than 12,000 buried under the rubble and more than 100 injured. And the health sector is incapable and to provide them with the health service that they deserve due to the demolished sector. And most of the population of Gaza, 2.5 million, are displaced in shelters and camps in very tough living conditions that are not human, and the children are suffering from diseases, from starvation, and women are lacking the basic needs of women. I would like to point to the fact that Gaza has become a place where is no place is safe in it after the targeting of Rafah, and most the population of Rafah have been displaced, and they have been directly targeted, and this has reached even to the western parts of Rafah, and people are in shelters, and most people who leave to those shelters, they leave without previous preparation. No shelter is capable of hosting these huge numbers of people lacking the basic needs. People just leave their houses, go to the street until they find the right camp or tent or a shelter. These are the daily sufferings of the people of Gaza. In addition to the direct targeting of the health sector, most of them are out of service. Even health workers are being targeted. Social services are unavailable at all because the infrastructure is destroyed, and this has led to a lot of suffering for the people of Gaza, and it led to trauma, to crises, to collapse in the culture itself, in the values, and this has really destroyed the community as a whole. The results of the war have affected everyone and each sector, and the people of Gaza are paying for it. And the call now is for everyone to act. And I call upon you as a leader in the sector in Palestine, I call upon all unionists in the U.S. to help us and to have some pressure and some leverage to end this bloodshed, and to have some leverage on the government of the U.S. In order to force the Israeli government to stop this war and this genocide and the targeting of civilians, women and children mainly. And most of the injured are elderly women and children. So the call is to cooperate and unite in order to force an embargo on the shipment of weapons to the occupation, to stop these weapons from reaching the Israelis because they are using them to kill more and more Palestinians and to continue this genocide and to help us stand up again and to rebuild our society. We call upon everyone to have a united international position or advocacy campaign to help us to regain our dignity, to regain our lives, our normal lives, after losing the possibility of having a life or a hope. There is no safety, no security under this war, and people are suffering from a lot of problems that require us or all those people with morals, with values, with dignity to stand with us and to support our righteous right to have our state, to help us in bringing life to our society that is subject to genocide. I hope on behalf of the Palestinian people and the Gaza Strip to stop this war, to stop the genocide, and to get back our dignity in order to live, to have the minimum, be it in the health sector or through our right to education and to live a normal life like everyone in the world. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate and I hope that we all can stand together to stop all violations of human rights in this world. Peace be upon all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Sawader, joining us with that powerful message under such difficult and tragic circumstances. Next, I want to turn to Sister Shahrukh Assad, a journalist and a leader in her view. We just heard about the devastating conditions facing healthcare workers, Sister Shahrukh, and all the people in Gaza. Can you tell us about the challenges facing journalists in this moment and how your union is advocating for an end to the war and for the safety and the well-being of Palestinian journalists?
First, I want to thank you all for organizing this webinar or panel. It's highly needed in this hard and tragic circumstances. And it gives us hope, again, I always say this, that our voices and our colleagues' voices is being heard. I came now to you after a long day trying to reach to Jenin to film and do report. I have to tell you that usually it takes not more than hour and a half, 2 hours. It took me 3 hours going and nearly 3 hours and a half going back. It was very frightening and dangerous, and I got stopped at the Israeli checkpoints, though I have my TV stickers all over, my life vest, jacket, my equipment. Settlers, armed settlers were around us all the time. It was really very hard to do our job. The sad thing is that now I see, and all my colleagues here in West Bank, we see those attacks on us as if they are nothing comparing to what our colleagues are facing in Gaza. Yesterday, we put our report in the syndicate, PGS, and we lost 151 journalists the last 9 months. So many are injured without their arms or legs, or now they are displaced for the maybe eighth time. Yesterday I was trying, because usually I send messages to my colleagues due to lack of internet, lack of electricity connection, which also make it very hard for them to deliver their stories, their videos that they film. But also I like to check on them. And usually after a couple of days, sometimes a week, till I receive message back, and I keep on asking, are they alive or are they dead? Are they okay? And yesterday they were telling me that they because they moved those, my colleagues, some of them who turned back the message, they were displaced from North Gaza to Deir el-Balah, then to Khan Yunis, then to Rafah, then back again after the invasion of Rafah. They went to Al-Mawasi in Khan Yunis, also they were bombed, and now they're trying in Ansirat to stay in Sirat and Erbrej. They have no water. They walk for an hour and a half to try to get a gallon of water, which is not polluted. All of them are sick, have so many bacterial issues and viruses and pollution. They don't find any medicine. All of our other equipments, most of them lost their equipment, camera, editing, mics, due to the Israeli bombing. As I said in our last meeting, Israel bombed 88 now, because it's more of the media offices in Gaza. They have no place to work from, as any normal protected journalist, as say international law and human rights. They walk in very hard circumstances. Some even don't have shoes to wear, because there's nothing in the market to really wear. One has one shoe, they try to wear it, some colleagues, when they have the missions. Some even walk with their barefoot. A colleague is injured due to the shelling, was telling me that Israel refused to let him out of Gaza to get treated. And maybe now, because due there's lack of medicine and medication and the issue of devastation or bombing of 80% of the hospitals, now they are bombed. He may really face that his leg will be cut at the end without even any anesthesia. He's only 24 years old. It's hard for them to even, they go for like an hour to try to find a network or internet. They say they have so many videos they cannot deliver for their media organizations. They are terrified. They lost all of them, all of our colleagues, lost family or friends or colleagues. We have nearly 1,600 displaced. We have only 90 to 100 colleagues who managed to stay in North Gaza. North Gaza is facing starvation, literally starvation. Beside the internet problem, beside the electricity, beside the targeting, the lack of protection, they are also under kind of cut between the other areas. They cannot move. It's very dangerous to reach to areas, to cover, to... I'm trying to tell you neatly what they face, but I think without them, really, we would not have known, without those local journalists, while Israel refused to let any journalists inside Gaza. Without them, we really could not have known or knew so many of the massacres that is going on. They are in very hard circumstances, and we're trying to deliver to you and to so many of people what are the challenges and the dangers. What they are facing, no journalist really faced all over the world. This number of our colleagues who are killed, this means like we are losing each week 5 journalists. It's a huge number with the population of Gaza, which is nearly 2 million. This means that maybe in the population of put it in the population of United States, this will be really a huge number of journalists. Also a huge number of women, children killed. So I hope I delivered a little bit of what they are facing. And I recall that they have to be protected. This is their right. There's right of freedom of speech. We really hope that people will stand with us so they can have this right, and that really people should, or organizations or syndicates or workers should really work together. The best thing we can do this is first deliver their voices, second, stick to human rights that we all belong to, and also really stop any support, military, money, anything for Israel, because it's killing our colleagues and the children and the women. And I hope we will really see this as an attack on the whole journalism scene, not only the attack on Palestinian journalism scene, attack on workers, on doctors. Doctors, we lost nearly 500 till now. We lost more than 250 teachers till now. Those are all workers, and support is needed, because this is our ethics, and this is our humanity, and this is the international law that we all share. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, sister, for that powerful and moving and compelling presentation that speaks so loudly and clearly to what's happening on the ground.
Hello, this is Ann Lucas again. I'm dropping back in here to say that the next guest really gives an important overview of what the West Bank is going through on the ground, which we don't get to hear much about in the Western media. I also wanted to clarify the labor organizations the workers are talking about. It confused me a bit at first, so maybe it's confusing some listeners too. So Sister Farouk, who we just heard from, is the spokesperson for the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate, which appears to be a freestanding union for Palestinian journalists in the occupied territories. The next guest is Ala Imayis, and he is the secretary of the Greater Ramallah Region for the PGFTU, the Palestinian General Federation of Trade Unions. The PGFTU is the umbrella organization for multiple Palestinian trade unions. So Dr. Zwitzer, who we heard from in Gaza, is the PGFTU secretary for the Gaza region. Dr. Zwitzer also represents the healthcare workers union specifically. Brother Alat represents the transit and communications union. Both of these unions are under the same umbrella organization as the PGFTU. And with that, here is Brother Alat.
At the outset, I would like to thank everyone for this webinar, which is very important for us as Palestinians, so we can deliver our message to the whole world about the suffering of Palestinian people over 76 years. This outrageous war on Gaza and in the West Bank, it is very important that we have this channel of communication between us and the unionists in the U.S., a great nation, and we hope that this image would be clear and delivered clearly to everyone. My name is Ala Mayasi, the director of the Transport Union in Palestine, and I am head of the PGFTU in Ramallah. I'm not going to repeat what Dr. Salama and Ms. Shurukh has said. They have talked about the suffering of our people in Gaza and some sectors. I would talk about transportation. The Palestinians have always been keen on developing their country and to be up to the international standards. However, unfortunately, we live in very tough times. We've been pushed back 100 years and the violations that we are subject to. In 1998, we had a Gaza airport that was opened by the US president, but now this airport has been destroyed. It has stopped for 24 years. It worked only for, it was operational for 2 years only. It is the right of the Palestinian people to have their airport, but the occupation have destroyed it. Here, the suffering of the Palestinians after the peace process. The Israelis have worked on the demining and destroying everything that is part of the Palestinian identity. In Gaza, people drink from seawater. However, we in the West Bank, we have allocations of water that are subject to a decision from the Israelis, and they just give us some portion of water. This is a way to impose some pressure on us and on the authority. And the continuous wars and on Gaza and the siege on Gaza, actually, transportation is destroyed, and there are rarely trucks going through to Gaza, and the trucks are also very old, and 2,500 trucks. There were 10,000 drivers working on these trucks, and now they have lost all the trucks, and that means we have added to unemployment, fishing. The fishing sector also is completely destroyed. They can't go fishing. They can't. They don't have boats, and we really blame the whole world who claim that they are advocates for human rights and freedom. They can't force Israel to make food get into or wheat or one truck into Gaza. I think with that, all masks of humanity have fallen, and the Palestinians are peace loving. It is the land of Jesus. It's the land of Muhammad, Prophet Muhammad, and the Gaza Strip is a complete mess. This is the war.
في اوصال المدن اللي بيعيشوها اللي فرضها علينا الاحتلال الاعتداءات
because of the
والمخاطر اللي بيعيشها
عمال there are
الاعتداء عليهم استشهدوا
a lot of attacks on the transportation sector. Many of our workers have been killed and many were taken into prison. Their crime is because they take people from one place to another.
Workers in transportation
have been suffering. We can't put a strategy to develop our sector. Today, workers in the West Bank, they have lost like 70% of their income. They live on only 30% knowing that the prices are soaring up because of the war. And also in the West Bank, we have the problem of supplies that are not reaching our territories because of the Israeli constraints. We live only on 25% of the land that was acknowledged by the whole world as the state of Palestine. We live only on 24% of the country of the land of Palestine that has been shredded into cantons, and because of putting settlements here and there in order to cut our villages. We have like over 400 checkpoints. So as Sharouk said, if I want to go to Jenin, the road would take me 1 hour, but because of the checkpoints, it would take me like 4 hours, not to mention the risks and the dangers of this trip. Many people would be subject to attacks from settlers when commuting in their car, in their vehicles. So many people have stopped working in the transportation sector because of the risks. All those who used to work in Israel, since 7th of October, they are jobless. They were a source of 1,300,000 shekels to the Palestinian families. But now all of this has stopped. It is not because of security. It is a way to have some extra pressure on the Palestinian people. They have worked relentlessly on destroying the economy of the Palestinians, and we don't have the minimal requirements for a normal life. We are living a catastrophe. We hope that there would be justice or a clear position against the Israeli practices against the Palestinians. Since 1947, there is 1,000 UN resolutions, none of which have been forced into effect. Our people have been subject to injustice. We hope and we really urge our colleagues and the U.S. trade unions to have a clear position from what is happening and from the sufferings of the Palestinian workers. And we have an experience with America and the people of America. I will give you only an example. And the U.S. and the U.S. administration and the people of the U.S., they are capable of lifting the injustice. In 1956, Eisenhower, there was a war on Egypt at that time. He called to Israel to withdraw from Sinai and the Gaza Strip. Eisenhower called Israel to withdraw, or else he would impose stop the U.S. financial and military assistance. We know the citizens of America, they have always stood with us, but unfortunately, recently we see the U.S. administration is completely biased and standing with the Israelis, but we trust the U.S. citizens and the unionists. We saw their democracy, their humanity, and we hope that this would be translated into a position in our support and to advocate for us and to get to know U.S. unionists. And I hope you can really have some leverage on the U.S. administration. And with that, we thank you for your clear position, and you have voted compensating the Palestinian workers in the West Bank, but unfortunately without a real effective language, a strong language, and a real threat to the Israelis, they would not really respond. Israel considers itself immune, and but we are the Palestinians. We respect law. We respect all peoples. We only call for justice, to live in dignity, humanity, and peace. Nothing more, nothing less. We are peace-loving. And with that, I thank you all, and I thank you for this webinar.
And thank you so much, brother, for sharing those perspectives, in particular on the impact of this war on the working class of Palestine, both the West Bank and Gaza. Let me introduce the final guest for this panel, and then we'll get to a few other points of business. Rafif Ziuda is heads up the Workers in Palestine. And Rafif, I know we know you've been organizing with workers and unions around the world to amplify the voices of Palestinian workers and unions. And so tell us why it's so important to build union to union, worker to worker solidarity in this moment. And that solidarity also taking the form of ceasing military aid to the Israeli government and the war crimes that are following that aid.
Thank you, Brother Mark, for that very kind introduction, and to the network for hosting us. As you've heard, it's a very, very difficult time for Palestinians right now. So it's very important that we are getting together and having these conversations. Many thanks to the National Labor Network for a ceasefire for hosting us today. I work with an organization called Workers in Palestine. I will be brief because a lot has been covered. I want to say that on October 16th, 2023, as the bombing intensified on Gaza, Palestinian unions issued a historic call, and it had a very simple demand to stop arming Israel. This is, of course, given the military and diplomatic support it was receiving from the United States and the European Union. We appealed to the world and to workers specifically to refrain from manufacturing, transporting, and handling goods and surveillance technology. Since then, every office of the Palestinian General Federation of Trade Unions in Gaza has been bombed. When we issued this call, we were asking our colleagues, our brothers and sisters in Gaza, to sign on to a statement and to draft a statement, as they were hiding from bombs and trying to take care of families, trying to find their loved ones under the rubble. So I urge everyone to please go to the Workers in Palestine website and learn about that call. For us Palestinians, it truly has become difficult to find words anymore. But we know that it's on us to speak from within a genocide, to teach, to educate, to plan campaigns, and to reach out to our brothers and sisters in the trade union movement internationally. Today, Palestinian doctors, nurses, journalists, transport workers, fisherfolk are all holding communities together in Gaza. Many times when people speak about the war, they forget that workers in Palestine, like workers everywhere, step up to hold communities together. Palestinian workers have been at the front lines in Gaza, saving lives, rescuing communities among relentless bombardment, mostly by United States-made weapons. Our brothers and sisters in Gaza from the General Federation of Trade Unions, who we wished could be with us today, are mostly living in tents, having been uprooted now more than 8 times. And they keep shifting around, but they refuse to leave because they have jobs to do on the ground and they keep doing them. So please keep them in your mind. Please keep them in your hearts as we have these conversations. And this work is particularly important in the United States, of course, because the U.S. continues to be Israel's main weapons supplier. The U.S. provides regular weapons to Israel. Its current agreement from 2019 to 2028 is worth $3.8 billion. Since the start of Israel's current attack, the U.S. government has approved the provision of an extra $14.5 billion in military aid as part of an aid package to Israel. We believe this money can be much better spent at home. It can be much better spent on workers, especially as the cost of living crisis intensifies. Why is all of this funding going to the Israeli state to continue its atrocities against the Palestinian people? We know that the giant manufacturing companies, military companies, are making a killing out of the destruction of Gaza. And as workers, we believe that an injury to one is an injury to all. So all we ask is that U.S. workers also take responsibility and say, not in our name, not in our tax dollars, and not in the jobs that we have, should the destruction of Palestinian lives continue. Since we issued this call, we've had many unions around the world heed it and take action. Workers in the port of Barcelona have refused to transport weapons. Dock workers in Italy have refused to handle weapons. More and more dock workers' unions are joining the call. As workers in Palestine, we are trade unionists, Palestinian, around the world. And the reason we came together was largely because the voices of Palestinian workers on the ground with the cuts to electricity weren't being heard internationally. And people were speaking about Palestine as if there are no workers. So we are here to amplify the work of Palestinian trade unions. We have produced guidance sheets for how you can organize in your trade union, model motions, and research on who arms Israel, who is manufacturing and where they are manufacturing. Please use all of this research so we can work together. We need a ceasefire, but now we have gone even beyond the demands for a ceasefire as Gaza has become completely destroyed. And the people there and the workers there are saying they do not want charity, because solidarity is not charity. It's about stepping up and saying not in our name. It's about speaking at this time around the importance of the ceasefire, but also the importance of what life will be like in Gaza later. Palestinian workers want to rebuild Gaza, and they have done it over and over. Palestinians in the West Bank, Palestinians all over the world have been saying for decades now, we are not subhuman. We deserve to live in dignity and freedom, just as everyone else. Our demands are very clear. We want trade unions around the world to truly go back to the spirit of internationalism that ended apartheid in South Africa, to help and stand with Palestinian workers until Palestine is free. Thank you all for being here, and thanks very much for all the organizing.
Sister, thank you so much for those excellent comments. And I think that everyone on this webinar would second the motion and the emotion, not in our name, not in our name. And our first question we received, and we received many like it, is from Enid Eckstein, an 1199 SEIU member, who asks, what can supporters in the U.S. do to be most helpful to the union movement in Palestine? And I think that some of that was already touched on in the comments. But if any of the three of you who are on, Rafif, Allah, Sharouk, would like to share a little more on that, jump in.
Yeah, I'll start, Rafif, dear. It's well, there's a lot to be done, but mainly, in my opinion, to address all the workers or the companies that are part of the workers' community in general, if they give aid to Israel that goes to the army with money, with weapons, with so many other things, I think there should be pressure on them, because maybe this is the only way we can really stop the killing of children and women and all the workers inside Gaza, and what will come also in West Bank. I think doing pressure, real pressure, and to make them be questioned why they are doing this, and if they do this, they are partners in genocide. I think this is one of the main things to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to echo what Sharouk is saying, I think it's high time we do a lot of education in the labor movement around the arms trade with Israel, around how the U.S. is supporting Israel. Many people don't know the effects of this arms trade on the ground and what is happening in Palestine and the various ways that the military support, but also the diplomatic support, actually ensures that there is no justice and no peace in the long term for Palestinians. So there is so much education, and within workers in Palestine, we really believe in rank and file education. We want members of the unions to understand what workers in Palestine are going through, that it's not just some faraway conflict that doesn't affect them, that in so many ways their tax dollars are being spent over there. And nobody wants to see hospitals being bombed, schools being bombed, an entire society being destroyed live on our television screens. And I think there's a lot of ways to do this rank and file education. Webinars like this are a very important first step. People hearing from trade unionists in Palestine and from Palestinians themselves about the real conditions of life. I used to organize with the Canadian Union of Public Employees. And when Palestinian teachers or nurses would speak about the conditions they face, people couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe that as an ambulance driver, you would be facing bullets just in order to pick up somebody and try to take them to a hospital. It's an abnormal situation. And I think when we speak to people about it truthfully, they begin to understand the conditions and really have solidarity with Palestinians, again, as workers, not some faraway war.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know, is Allah still on or not, but if you'd like to jump in, otherwise we'll go to the next question. Okay, so we have a second question. It's a very broad question, but an important one. And this comes from Alice Freund, a member of the New Jersey Education Association. And she asked, what does your union believe is the long-lasting solution to the conflict with Israel? And adding to the question, what would the goals of the Palestinian labor movement be once you've secured a lasting peace? That's a big question. But if you want to take a piece of it, we'd certainly appreciate your thoughts.
I must say that I get asked this question a lot about solutions, and it's really quite difficult right now with the conditions the way they are, both in the West Bank and Gaza. I think because all eyes are on Gaza, people forget that things have gotten also much worse in the West Bank. The illegal settler harassment, the harassment at checkpoints, what Alaa referred to before as the cantons that have been created that Palestinians cannot pass through. The situation on the ground is truly devastating. And rather than you know, grand final solutions to propose, I would say we have to begin with people, how they are living, and questions of justice. It cannot be that the lives of Palestinians are ruled over by 18-year-old boys in the Israeli military who get to dictate every aspect of our lives day in and day out. So the first step has to always be ending the military occupation, which again continues to be supported by the United States as its official sponsor. So we have to start from this lived reality of Palestinians on the ground and speak about ending the occupation, ending the system that inflicts this segregation on Palestinians that are living in a land where their lives are completely controlled by a foreign military. I do hope that in a future, we can all live in peace on that piece of land. For that to happen, there needs to be restitution and justice for Palestinian refugees. I'm a Palestinian refugee. My family was thrown out of our homes. So without talking about these issues of the right of return of Palestinian refugees, restitution, water, ending the military occupation, and justice for all Palestinians, then any talk of a solution would be fake. Solutions are built on justice. As workers know, when we go out on a picket line, we demand justice for workers, and this situation is no different.
Thank you so much, Rafis. Anyone else want to weigh in? Okay, so let me, before I share a few closing thoughts on behalf of the network, let me just remind everyone that if you haven't gone into the chat and taken the action to please do so and to share with your brothers and sisters and union families and comrades to do the same. And also, if you want to learn more and join with us with more work with the National Labor Network for Ceasefire, you can go to our website, laborforceasefire.org. So in closing, let me give a deep and huge appreciation on behalf of the National Labor Network to the panelists that joined us today under very difficult circumstances. We heard even a little bit just through the presentations of how our hard life has been, continues to be, and is worsening under this onslaught. And whether it's the checkpoint story that Sister Sharuk shared, or the brother from the healthcare workers in Gaza who couldn't even, doesn't even have communications or the ability to have joined us on this Zoom, or the workers that Alad talked about that can't even earn a living. That's the basic part of being a worker. We go out and work and we earn a living and we sustain ourselves and our families and our communities. But I really want to thank and deeply appreciate all of the panelists who got on to share their courageous stories. And we've all heard that despite the horrors of this war, our Palestinian sisters and brothers and union family have not given up hope. Their struggle ahead, their lives, their history, their culture, respected, live in dignity and freedom with security for their families and hope for a brighter future. It's the same spirit that ignites the struggles of working people around the world. As workers in the United States, as trade unionists in the United States, we have the challenge and the tremendous obligation to keep organizing and keep building solidarity between our unions and the workers in Palestine. For it is our government, and Rafif pointed this out very clearly, it is our government that uses our tax dollars to fund the war crimes you've heard about today. And it's our government that actually could stop the bloodshed, could answer the cries of humanity and stop the funding of this war. I hope this meeting, and I think it should, propel all of us who believe in international worker solidarity, who believe in peace and justice, who believe in standing with all humanity, that it propels us to ever more urgent action. Let's keep organizing. Let's build power in our workplaces. Let's keep building a movement to end this war. And then and also let's lock arms as working people around the globe to win the world we all want to see and live in, where every worker and their families can live in peace, work with dignity, return to their families, and grow our communities with justice and solidarity. Thanks for joining us. Thanks again, a wonderful heartfelt thanks to the courage of the panelists that joined us. Solidarity forever. Let's stay in touch and move forward with dispatch, with urgency, and with solidarity. Thank you all.
Very much. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, everybody.
Again, you were just listening to the webinar, War in Gaza, Voices of Palestinian Workers, organized by the National Labor Network for Ceasefire. It originally broadcast July 9th, 2024. We are out of time, but I wanted to remind everybody that This Week in Palestine is now a podcast, released on all major podcasting platforms. And for this show, there's going to be a lot of extra information in the show notes, including connections to workers in Palestine, ways for international workers to organize in solidarity with Palestinian workers. It takes a village to produce a show like This Week in Palestine. Special thanks to Stan Robinson and Bob Funk, with additional thanks to Steve Lowe and Mohammed El-Ghoul. This Week in Palestine is a production of Truth and Justice Radio, currently at the home of WZBC Student Radio at Boston College. Thank you for spending your time with us today as we continue to work towards Palestinian liberation. See you next week.